Holy Spirit. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Seed of wisdom. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And this week, our concentration will be on Jansenism. With the introduction to the Catechism on the Real Presence, that I hope will be finished by the time we complete our classes. If you suppose you read what you have, and I'll make comments as we go along. This Catechism on the Real Presence is based on the encyclical letter Mysterium Fidei, published by Pope Paul VI on the feast of St. Pius X on the 3rd of September 1965. The present-day revolution in the Catholic Church began. At the end of the fourth session of the Second Vatican Council in December 1965. As I believe we said last week, the present, I call it revolution, call it crisis, is the most serious, in my estimation, in the 2,000 years of the Catholic Church's history. It is, this document is one of the most important ever issued by any pope. It was published by the Pope, as I think we've said, during the Council, before the Council closed, in the Vatican official documents of Vatican II. This document, Mysterium Fidei, the encyclical on the Real Presence, is part of the teaching of the Second Vatican Council. The reason for its publication, as Pope Paul VI explained, was to ensure that the liturgical modifications authorized by Vatican II would bear the fruit which the Pope expected. The first document of Vatican II was on the liturgy. So many, I don't hesitate saying most, of the dramatic and even traumatic changes in the Church's liturgy since the Second Vatican Council were not authorized by the Second Vatican Council. The vernacular of the liturgy, English, French, Spanish, you name the language, that we in the United States simply take for granted, was never authorized by the Second Vatican Council. Pope Paul VI, therefore, feared, and has now 30 years since he published the document, his fears have been more than verified. He feared that the rise of errors on the real peasants, already then in 1965, arising, would prevent the revised liturgy from bearing the supernatural fruit which it was intended to produce. My 27th year in working for the Holy See, I can tell you, the root of the revolution in the Catholic Church going on in one so-called developed country after another, like the United States, that root is the liturgy. And the basis of the revolution, which is mainly centered on the liturgy, the foundation of that revolution is the weakening and even breaking down of faith in the real presence of Christ in the Blessed Sacrament. That is why Paul VI did the unprecedented thing of issuing a document, and notice, he didn't wait for the council, the bishops, to pass the document. He wrote this on his own authority. He had justifiable fears that what the Second Vatican Council decreed, and I repeat, that opening document of Vatican II on the liturgy is, I'll use the word, straight. It is sound. It is the Church's desire, authorized by the Vicar of Christ, to restore the Church's liturgy to its origins, back, and I mean this, to the first, second, and third centuries of Christian history. However, and what a however this is, errors began to creep in to Catholic thinking, especially Catholic theology. Already before the Second Vatican Council began, I'll never forget when I came to Rome in 1949, and about this time in September, to begin my graduate studies as a priest, to get a doctorate in dogmatic theology from the Gregorian University in Rome. I don't believe I share this with you. Can I tell you that I found some 30 Jesuits? I tell you about this. Some 30 Jesuits, beyond the 100, including myself, who had just been ordained happy to call our licentiate in theology, and we're to get our doctorate in sacred theology. But when we got to Rome, we found these men in their 40s, 50s, and even into the early 60s. So we asked them, "What are you men doing here? You must have a doctor degrees. We all have their doctorates. So what are you doing here?" So they told us, younger Jesuits, Pope Pius XII closed our seminaries in Holland and northern France and told us teachers, if all professors had Jesuit seminaries, the Pope ordered all of us to go back to Rome and catch up on our Catholic faith. For 2 years, till I got my doctorate, I lived with men of high intelligence who had published books with our imprimaturs. And of course, in God's providence, I had the experience in the 40s and early 50s of what the church is going through today. These ideas are already in the minds of those who are shaped now in almost 50 years, shape the minds of millions contrary to the teachings of Christ and of the church which Christ founded. Back to our introduction. In writing this catechism, which, please God, I will finish by Christmas, the author made sure the teachings of Mysterium Fidei, that's the document of Paul VI, would be faithfully presented. However, the catechism, of which you will receive advance copies, my only request of you is do not multiply copies, or maybe a copy or two, for the obvious reason of not competing with a published catechism when it is in print. The catechism will also draw on other teachings of both Paul VI and the present Pope, John Paul II, all centering on two words, real presence. As I believe I told you last week, this class, and I would encourage you to welcome as many of your friends as you wish, this class in obedience to Pope John Paul II, in so many words, ordered me to his private secretary, do all you can to preserve the faith of the real presence where it exists. Strengthen that faith where it is weak, and restore that faith where it's been lost. This is the, capital T, capital H, capital E. This is the crisis in the Catholic Church in a country like ours today. The number after MF is a paragraph number which does not occur in the Pentatext. And he won't go into any details now, but the source of the answer is in the Stellium Fidei in the paragraphs which are not numbered in the text you will receive. And I would recommend, once you get a copy of the encyclical, to number the paragraphs in sequence. And, Lord willing, by next week, we have enough copies available, we can distribute a sample of all the 89 paragraphs and the opening words in the English translation. Once more, back to question number one. What is the most precious treasure of the Catholic Church? And the Holy Father answers, I'm not quoting, mind you. I'm paraphrasing the answers, based, however, on Paul the Sixth document. The most precious treasure of the Catholic Church is the Holy Eucharist, which is the most fundamental truth of the Catholic faith. Maybe what we are saying, the Holy Eucharist is both fundamental truth for the mind and it is the most precious treasure for our being, body and soul. The Catholic Church exists only where the Holy Eucharist is still present. Once Martin Luther broke with the Catholic Church in 1517, what we call Protestantism, and is called Christianity. But the church which Christ founded is simply not there. God, as I've been telling people over the years, became man for two reasons. First, he became man so he might have a human body and a soul which would separate and cause his death. God became man, first of all, to be able to die. God is God, cannot die. Secondly, God became man so after his ascension into heaven, he might remain on earth as man. Once this faith in the God-man, the Jesus Christ who Mary conceived in Nazareth, one's faith in his continued presence here on earth is lost. That's the end of the Catholic Church. That's why our Catholic seminaries, I think I told you last week, have dropped by 90% in membership in America, including the Archdiocese of Detroit and the Archdiocese of Chicago. It is just a matter of time, as my Vatican superiors tell me, when one diocese after another in the United States will disappear. Believe me, these are not ordinary lectures. Survival of the Catholic Church depends on bishops, priests, and the lay faithful who still believe in the real presence. Question number two. How is the Holy Eucharist the Church's most precious treasure? Maybe you're picking up on the previous answer. The Eucharist is the Church's most precious treasure because it is the pledge of Christ's immense love. Nowhere else does Christ manifest his love more deeply than in the Eucharist. Why not? Because the Eucharist is Jesus Christ. And as we'll see, it is this doctrine which is not being taught. What a safe statement in all professedly Catholic either universities or seminaries. When the Holy Father's secretary asks me, what are the still Orthodox seminaries left in America? I named the four or five that I knew. He told me, you know about those, more than the others. I trusted all of them, but I don't know all of them. As I mentioned in our Wednesday evening teleconference, as I'm sure you know, for several years now we've been having teleconferences on Doctors of the Faith. Usually one teleconference for each semester. The teleconference for this semester is on the Holy Eucharist. And last Wednesday's teleconference for broadcasting in different cities was on the crisis of faith in the real presence. In a recent issue of the homiletic and pastoral review, which I commend to all of you to subscribe, a good, sound Catholic magazine, Homiletic and Pastoral Review. An article in a recent issue raises this problem, given that so many priests have not been taught that only a priest can change bread and wine into the living body and blood of Christ. If a priest, if a man is ordained and did not believe that as a priest, he and he alone, of course bishops, priests, has the power to change bread and wine into the living Christ. There's one article in a recent issue of the Homiletic and Pastoral Review raises the question. How sure are the people, are the priests, at whose masses they participate? How sure are the faithful that mass was offered? That when they go to communion, they are receiving the body and blood of Christ. I repeat, we are dealing with the heart of Catholic Christianity in this course. Why then is the Eucharist the most precious treasure? Because the most precious treasure that God gave us is Himself becoming man, to remain man until when? There's no until. For all eternity, God will never cease to be man. The child that Mary conceived in Nazareth, gave birth to at Bethlehem, that child? No. The man, Jesus Christ, will remain on earth until the end of time, and in heaven for all eternity. Question 3. What was the mind of the Holy Father? Better, of the Holy Fathers. And better, I think, change the word. This is my original text. Of the fathers of the Second Vatican Council regarding the Eucharist. What was their mind? Their mind was to have believers participate in the Holy Eucharist with sound faith and with utmost devotion. The key word is sound faith. I got over 600 on my own Jesuits, their theology. All above average in intelligence, but in teaching them the faith. My responsibility was to help them understand what they believed. And I can tell you, 3 years of philosophy, 4 years of theology. But, for not a few, their minds, even after years of study, were still blurred. And now when you think of so many not even giving or getting a sound Catholic education, elementary grades, or secondary school, the confusion of faith on the Eucharist in the Catholic Church in our country is widespread. The reason, we may say, was obvious. The graces that we receive from the Holy Eucharist depend on the soundness of our faith in the Blessed Sacrament. And of course, then, the love of our hearts for Jesus Christ. But, my friends, nobody in his right mind genuflects before a piece of bread. Tastes like wine is you believe with your mind. That is the living God who became man. Or what do you do with tabernacles? either remove them or hide them. In one large country and city, in our own country after another, monstrances are on sale in pawn shops. In other words, either we understand, and believe me, to understand is not the same as having the faith. May I ask all of you, and for the next day or so, open your New Testament, read chapter 13 of Matthew's Gospel. Chapter 13 is on the parable of the sower.